Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and joining us today is someone who had to learn about HOAs because he got thrown in the deep end, and he has been very active, very eloquent, very outspoken, and a good friend over the years. Bill Davis from Texas, thank you so much for joining us today, Bill. Bill, we've had some problems with the legislature over the last few years because there's been a lot of bills coming through, and not all of them have been good for the homeowners. And you tell me that you've had in excess of 100 bills this year in Texas?
It's certainly over 70, and I believe it's much closer to 100, yes. I think that that should show some evidence to the legislators about how ugly the HOA problem is and how prevalent the problems are across the state. They're hardly the isolated incidences that the industry folks would have you believe.
Well, I know they're not isolated because I hear from people all the time, and you know, it's the same stories all the time.
Yes.
Some of the bills that you were telling me about are pretty serious, and some of the stuff that's happening, I guess CAIs, right, have got their grubby little paws right in there, right?
They sure do.
What have they been up to, Bill?
Well, some of the ugly ones include, these are passed off as merely statutes for particular geographic areas to be able to amend restrictive covenants or to modify restrictive covenants. What's not usually revealed at the public hearing is that the goal of the industry, of course, is to amend the restrictive covenants to impose HOAs, because after all, that's how the lot is burdened with an HOA, is through the restrictive covenants. So there won't be any mention of it. It'll just be cast as a statute to amend a restrictive covenant. It sounds rather benign, but it's quite ugly. One of them this year was even proposed by the city of Houston. The city planning department was trying to make it easy for a relatively small number. In fact, they testified last August that they would like for as few as 30% of the homeowners or the landowners to be able to impose a mandatory association in order to be able to create needed deed restrictions. And I have to ask, well, who needs these deed restrictions? I mean, and they wanted the power to be able to annex areas. Can you imagine that, an HOA annexing areas? That sure evidences choice for the people in those areas, doesn't it?
Annex areas, what do you mean by that?
Add areas to the HOA that were not subject to the HOA.
So you could be sitting on the outskirts, you could be across the street from an HOA, and the HOA decides, hey, we think we want you to be part of our little group over here, and we're just going to come and take you?
That's precisely what the city of Houston was promoting before the Urban Affairs Committee last August, yes.
You are kidding.
I'm not kidding.
What's the rationale behind doing that? And what about the people who live in those areas who may not want to be part of an HOA or this HOA?
Well, I agree with you, and it seems to me that if this is really about choice, then they already made their choice, didn't they? They didn't want to be in the HOA, and they didn't want to be in any HOA. I think what's really going on in Houston is it's a mechanism for the city and developers to reclaim property. Basically, as soon as they move in, you end up with the priority of payment scam. Oh, by the way, the city of Houston is offering pro bono legal services. Of course, these are industry attorneys, putting the ugliest you can imagine in these restrictive covenants. But what you very quickly have is the priority of payment scam, you know, where you they'll impose mandatory assessments, and then they'll have the priority of payment scam where they recharacterize your payments and apply them to HOA attorney fees and management company fees and things of this nature before they get applied to assessments. And then, of course, what happens is the homeowner gets foreclosed upon for alleged failure to pay his assessments. I think what's going on is this is being used as a means, or the intent of the city of Houston is to use it as a means to reclaim areas for redevelopment. And they are very aggressively trying to create mandatory HOAs in older neighborhoods. In fact, they testified that they wanted to impose mandatory neighborhood, mandatory HOAs in neighborhoods for homes built in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s.
They're doing that here. They're using eminent domain.
Or
the developers are coming in with these whacking great big, you know, offers, and people can sell their older homes without having to fix them up or do anything about it. You know, they just pocket the money and they move into something brand spanking new.
Right. Well, what City of Houston is proposing is pretty ugly, but actually they're... What was a little rare was they actually had someone from the City of Houston appear and testify, and it was pretty easy to get to what the real objective was and what was going to be happening with the City of Houston. The City of Houston claimed that they needed this to preserve character of neighborhoods, but the reality is if anyone's been to Houston the last few years, you'll find out that they've largely been promoting condominiums and basically a vertical tax base, because it's real efficient at taxation, right? You, for the same square footage on the land, all of a sudden you've got a much higher density of tax revenue because you're going straight up, right?
Right.
And the City of Houston's hardly opposed to these condominiums, although that's the example that they used. It's the reason that they needed to do this, to preserve character. The reality is they're trying to do this in order to disenfranchise the residents who are there through the use of an HOA. They are using this to reclaim property, in my opinion. And the bottom line is these people didn't agree to this. They hadn't had one for 70 years. Who claims that they need one? In fact, none of the people in these areas came and testified in support of one. And, you know, these people don't need them, and they certainly don't need the mandatory assessments or all the other things that come along with it. The threat of foreclosure, liens on their homes into perpetuity. Why did they want that? Why did anyone want that?
Well, you know, when HOAs first started being mass-produced, the idea was to give local municipal governments a free ride so that they could still collect the taxes and then not really have to provide any of the services. The HOA would pick it up, which in effect ended up being a case of double taxation on the homeowners. And the homeowners never really accepted or realized that. They just thought they were getting extra amenities for their money, and this was a great thing. They were lied to. They're still being lied to. And now in this economic downturn, what you're seeing, I think, is the local municipal governments that are getting even greedier. Hey, you know, if we could get away with that, let's see what else we can get away with. And why not just multiply the amount of tax revenue just by piling people on top of each other, all on the same little square foot of land.
Right. Well, they seem to be getting more creative about the ways to get more revenue from the same people. A few years ago, there was a statute passed that allowed the city to enforce a restrictive covenant. Now, you have to ask, why is the city involved? I mean, you know, the homeowners have never had any help because they've told, oh, that's a private matter between you and the HOA. But now the cities have the ability to enforce a restrictive covenant and collect fines and civil damages. And I really fail to understand why the city, which supposedly wasn't a party, I mean, after all, that's why constitutional provisions don't apply in HOAs, right, because they're private and it wasn't state supposedly mandated or state controlled. It was supposedly a matter between private individuals, and yet the city's been given these special enforcement powers. And, in fact, the City of Houston has recently created a criminal offenses, and you can be charged $150 a day for violations of various ordinances that not you, and not ordinances that apply to the whole city, but a city-created ordinance that applies only to the HOAs that elect it, which means that your board president can say, I want that ordinance to apply here, and suddenly you find yourself on the end of a possible criminal charge for something that's not really, it's not ordinarily illegal, and it's not something that the city can impose as an ordinance. And they consider it a matter of private choice when the person accused didn't really choose at all.
Can you elaborate on how that works a little bit? It sounds so far-fetched and so bizarre.
Well, it's
so third worldish.
It really kind of is. Well, there's two parts we talked about. One, What we talked about, the city collecting damages from enforcing restrictive covenants or being able to enforce them, and two, making criminal offenses of some of these things. As to the first one, I know that various platting authorities, in our case it's the county and other places it may be the city or a subdivision of the city, department of the city, they will impose restrictive covenants as a condition of platting the property. And so the idea that the homeowners actually got to choose any of this is ludicrous. But if you violate those, then the city or the county has the right to collect, to enforce it and to collect, even though they're not supposedly party to the contract. You know, the alleged contract, which we should disagree that there actually is a contract, but for years it's been termed a contract. So if it's a contract and the city's not part of it, why is the city have the right to enforce it and collect damages from it?
So these are city ordinances. It's not even that, you know, with this contract that we have, at least if there are going to be any major changes other than rules governing the common areas, the homeowners have supposedly a choice in whether or not they want to approve the amendments. Now the city is imposing their ordinances and the HOA is enforcing them and the city is collecting the fines. Have I got that right?
Well, it's something like that. There's two kinds. There's the restrictive covenants themselves that the city or the county has put in there as a condition of allowing the subdivision of land to take place in the first place. And they
right.
won't otherwise be party to the quote contract. You know, the restrictive covenants will just say one thing. But you'll find that the city or county is very interested in anything that's going to generate tax revenue for them, but they're not interested in enforcing the restrictive covenants as to voting rights for the homeowners or anything else. You'll never see them get involved with that, but they're going to be there if it comes to enforcing restrictive covenants regarding having a well on your property or something of that nature. But that's a little bit different than the other thing that's going on in Houston right now, which they just started in April this year. They've created some criminal ordinances that only apply. They cannot do this across the city. It would be prohibited by law. And what they've done is create an ordinance that's applicable only to the areas that agree to this. And the way they've come up with this is they ask the HOA or the board president or the board or whoever to agree to add their subdivision or all the lots burdened by the HOA to this new ordinance program. And so what happens is if the lot owner won't have a choice. This decision is being made by, you know, supposedly a board member or the president of the board or something like that. They just sign a statement that says, I affirm or I certify that we've added this. We agree to be bound by the city of Houston such and such ordinance. Well, the homeowners didn't agree to that, and these are criminal ordinances in this new case that's coming up. And if the city finds you in violation of these ordinances because it had its own right to enforce them, it will hit you up with a $150 a day Class C misdemeanor. Okay?
Wow.
That's a criminal offense. That's not even a civil damage. That's a criminal offense. And by the way, one of the architects of that was also the same woman who came and testified about creating, you know, HOAs in neighborhoods that never had them because they're trying to do stuff like this.
Who was that?
Marlene Gaffrick. City of Houston Planning Department.
So she's a public official.
Oh yes, she's very active in trying to force HOAs in the neighborhoods. Going so far as to go to the state legislature and to try and get new legislation to do just that, and to support such legislation by testifying in favor of it.
Because usually you see CAI doing stuff like that, but and members of the industry.
Well, I believe she's affiliated with Urban Land Institute. I've seen her name, Urban Land Institute things. And CAI is always there to support, you know, her position of creating these.
Of course.
HOAs everywhere.
Of course.
One of her big problems was there's two statutes in Texas for that generally for creating HOAs. One of them is to have a petition committee formed, just very briefly. That's called Property Code 201, but for the people who decide to have an HOA can have one, But also the people who don't want to be a part of it can choose to opt out. Okay, so there's a choice for you, although there is a little bit more onus on the people to opt out because there's a strict time limit they have to act within and things like this, which seems kind of unfair because, you know, unless you've decided to opt in, the default should be that you don't want any part of it. But 204 does not allow homeowners to opt out. So if you, and there's been a number of concerns about crooked elections because all in evidence that people actually chose this. And the city of Houston has been promoting this. And in fact, on their website, they kind of highlight the fact that if it's a property 204, property code 204 HOA, that homeowners can't opt out. So everyone's bound, even by a vote of, you know, a few of the subdivision. And so the city of Houston has been promoting this 204 type of HOA everywhere. One of the problems with 204 is it's two steps. It requires you to form a POA for the sole purpose of conducting an election to decide if everybody wants to have a POA. And the city of Houston is trying to change it into a single step. And what they do is they go around and ask neighbors, hey, please sign a petition to improve the neighborhood, something along these lines, okay? Well, before people know it, if it's a two-step process, they have time to realize what's going on and for opposition to raise up and go, wait a minute, these people are really trying to impose an HOA in your neighborhood. You don't even realize it. And what was happening was the opposition was successful because when people realized that what was really going on was the city of Houston was trying to encourage a mandatory HOA with the power to, you know, assess essentially unlimited amounts and be able to foreclose on their homes, they said, no way. So what the city of Houston was trying to do, because they want everybody to be bound, right? Really, who would want this? What the city of Houston was trying to do is to change it into a one-step process. So you go door-to-door and get people to sign a petition, and it's already over. Before you know it, it's already over because people don't even know that, you know, there was going to, that this was really about creating an HOA in their neighborhood. So it's really quite ugly what they're doing down there.
I know that we've had a number of people, like I've heard from a number of people, not just in Houston, although Houston is where it started, who've contacted me, contacted the show and said, you know, help, what do I do? My neighbors are trying to force me into an HOA. And they're going around with these petitions saying, you know, just lying, basically. We're going to protect property values and we're going to do this, that, and the other. And some of the more savvy people say, you know, nope, we don't want it. And they get involved and they get active.
Right.
But a lot of people don't know it. Oh, you're going to protect my property values? You want to protect me? Okay, where do I sign?
They're given the false propaganda and they don't realize how ugly it is until it's too late.
I agree with you. Now, that was one of the bills that was considered this year?
Yes, the city of Houston was trying to promote, or at least this woman in the planning department was trying to promote a bill, and so was industry, that would make it a simple one-step process to force a neighborhood of HOA-free homes into a mandatory, i.e. involuntary HOA. They were even offering, you know, free pro bono legal services. Of course, these would be provided by the CAI attorneys in Houston to write the restrictive covenants to reward the attorneys. And but that bill, as I didn't make it anywhere once informed and educated legislators started asking questions about, does this mean there's going to be mandatory assessments and the power to foreclose? And, you know, the city of Houston had to say yes. That pretty well sunk the ship. You know, once they got exposed, it was over.
So that did not pass this year?
Correct. It's, well, legislative session isn't over. We're drawing to the near the very end here, but that did not make it out of committee, and I don't think that's going to go anywhere.
Okay. But it will be back next year, or next time you're in session.
There's no doubt that the bad guys will keep trying.
Yeah. And they'll try to get it through, so people need to be ever vigilant. They need to be working with their legislators.
Well, the really ugly thing about that bill, too, is that the homes they targeted are generally going to be inhabited, for the most part, either by senior citizens or
right.
economically vulnerable population.
Right.
And so it's really about reclaiming the property and kicking them out of their homes is what it's really about. And they were going to use an HOA to do that. In my opinion, it was about reclaiming the property for redevelopment for various developer interests and using the HOA as the proxy for doing that.
So these are older homes? In older neighborhoods.
Built in the 30s. They specifically stated they were targeting homes built in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Basically pre-HOA for the most part in Texas anyway. I mean, there's HOAs that have been around for a while, but this is certainly before CAI days or before the, you know, really ugly HOA statutes and HOA language got promulgated around the state.
We're talking to Bill Davis. Bill is an attorney in Texas, and he's been fighting the good fight, let's put it that way, and maybe we'll hear a little more about some of the battles he's been involved in. But Bill, I really want to focus a lot on legislation, because we're seeing that across the country, and the same bills are popping up in almost every state, and the same tactics are being used in almost every state as well. And we all know what the common denominator is, if you will. It's the industry that makes a living off the HOAs.
Yes.
And of
course, they're creating misery in them. Yeah.
They're creating misery in them, but they're also creating a whole lot of opportunity for themselves in it. You know, yesterday we talked a little bit, and we talked about stakeholders, and you want to tell us a little bit about that, where some of the legislators are saying that the industry are stakeholders?
Well, as I understand it now, I got this secondhand from an acquaintance, but a representative of an HOA reform group out of Houston went to go talk to the legislator to find out why do you consistently compromise in favor of the industry. Every time the industry stuff is left intact and anything that's pro-homeowner seems to get watered down in favor of the industry. And the legislator's response was that she was a stakeholder, and so were they. And yet it's like, wait a minute, you're talking about the owner of the home, and you're giving them less of a stakeholder interest than you are the industry people who have no ownership in your home and who are there only to – you're the prey. I mean, you know, why are you giving these people such a stake? To me, that's like – I might have said this before, but that's like saying, hey, the mortician lobby is a stakeholder in my health care plan, and therefore they should be able to dictate the terms of my health care plan. That's a false stakeholder. You know, these people aren't these aren't legitimate stakeholders.
That's a funny picture, Bill.
they can say no. You know, if you're this age, then you're going to be denied this type of aid because, you know, they'll make money off your demise.
That's coming anyway, but yeah. That's coming with the health care reforms that are in the air. But we're not going to go there. We're going to stay where we are. And when you told me that yesterday, my response was that the homeowners are shareholders. They're not stakeholders. They're shareholders. They own their homes.
Yes.
And for a legislator to say that, you know, the stakeholder like you, you know, the legislator just doesn't seem to understand the relationship here.
No, they seem to not understand restrictive covenants, what happens when these things are amended, why the industry is supporting making them easier. They do not understand that HOAs are not democratic organizations. And, you know, if you just look at how the industry has worked very, very hard to ensure that they aren't democratic organizations, I don't even understand why anybody's bothering to compromise with these people, because they've done nothing but proffer lies after lies after lies and create more and more misery and hardship in homes of homeowners who have their property burdened with HOAs.
Bill, we're going to switch a little bit. Solomons, Representative Solomons?
Yes.
Bart Solomons, right? Is that his name?
Yes.
He appeared, at least for those of us sort of a few thousand miles away, appeared to be somewhat on the homeowner's side.
Yes.
At one point.
Yes.
And in fact, didn't he have a bill in that would have prevented or banned associations from foreclosing to collect assessments?
Yes, or it was at least going to put it to a constitutional vote, basically a vote of the people of the state of Texas as opposed to relying upon a single court case that came out in 1987. That's what the industry is largely based all the havoc it's been reaping for the last 20 years is on, that one court case which decided that it was okay for an HOA to have the power to foreclose.
So he had this bill in, and apparently CAI didn't like it very much.
Oh, of course not. They definitely did not. They've hired numerous lobbyists. I think they typically have three, maybe four lobbyists, and we've seen emails about how they're up to seven, and they were asking for vendors to demand payment from associations to help hire more lobbyists to oppose, any bill that would harm the industry. So I think they're up to at least nine right now.
So we have nine lobbyists, and to pay for them, we're going to the homeowners, and we're taking money from the homeowners so that we can push through bills that would allow us to take their homes away from them.
Right. The money that's being used to hire these lobbyists was taken from homeowners under threat of foreclosure in the first place. And the lobbyists are only working against the homeowners, not for the homeowners. And any other mandatory association I'm familiar with, this is another practice that just has to be stopped in this state and other states. The state bar, whether it's a union, people do not have to allow the organization to pay lobby dollars and are required by law to provide for a deduction so that the employee or the member doesn't have to support lobbying activities that are directly opposite their interests. And yet this is going on all over the state of Texas. They have various campaigns to take money from the HOA. And, of course, in the past, closed books, closed records meant that the homeowners couldn't really get to the bottom of it.
And they still can't quite often.
Correct.
So anyway, it looks like CAI got involved with Solomons, at least the Texas chapter, and got him to agree to pull his bill. Is that, or they're going to support one of his bills if he agrees to pull two other ones?
Well, that other bill that they're supporting is an omnibus bill, and it has, in my opinion, although there are some supposed positive things for homeowners, these aren't things that should have been subject to discussion in the first place, like the right to vote. Okay.
Wait. The right to vote?
Yeah, the right to vote. For years, CAI has opposed homeowners having the right to vote. What they would do is accuse a homeowner of being in violation of a restrictive covenant, and that would be an excuse as to why they shouldn't be permitted to have a vote. They would also use the priority of payment scam. Again, that's where you get accused of being in violation of something, and so they hit you up with a fine, and your assessment of payment gets applied to the fine instead of being applied to your assessment, and leaving you theoretically in arrears on your assessment. And so they would claim, oh, you didn't pay your assessment, you're not entitled to a vote. So they'd use these accusations and the priority of payment scam to disenfranchise homeowners. And they've for years opposed homeowners having the right to vote. And this year they've been a little silent on that, although there's plenty of other things in this bill. You know, why should we even be arguing about that? But the danger to me in this bill are the things that the industry's getting. And the industry, however, was also adamantly opposed to House Bill 1977, which would have submitted, in House Joint Resolution 76, which would have basically submitted the issue of whether an HOA should have the power to foreclose to the people of Texas to make a vote. You know, should it be a constitutional amendment or not? Because there's constitutional implications in Texas, and that's the problem, is the people of the state of Texas have never voted on this. So
this would have been a constitutional amendment and not just an outright ban.
Correct. What it was a constitutional amendment to, in fact, that bill was conditioned on on an election being had on the constitutional amendment. Okay, but then, for 1977, so the constitutional amendment would have, I'm sorry, the election would have been as to whether there was whether the Texas Constitution should be amended to permit an HOA to foreclose, or should an HOA be prohibited from having the power to foreclose? Industry did not want that to be put to a vote of the people. Yet they claim this is all about democratic organizations. They have strived to do damage control by either outright opposing it or making it subject to each individual association. You know, they've tried any number of mechanisms. So I don't know where that bill stands right now. However, it did not come up for a vote as it should have earlier this week. So industry was probably successful in yet again ripping off the people of the state of Texas. So,
is that one of the two bills that they wanted him to withdraw?
Well, I don't know what the other bill they wanted him to withdraw, but...
So, 1977 and 76.
Well, HJR is a House Joint Resolution that would have said, hey, we want to have we want to have an election for a constitutional amendment. If that took place, then 1977 was conditioned upon there being a constitutional amendment in the first place. So those two are really kind of linked together. They're not...
Okay, those two are... Okay.
One would have been kind of an enabling legislation in the event that it was passed, but the problem with 1977, as many homeowners saw, was it was now going to allow and give an HOA constitutional authority to lien a home for a fine. And, of course, there's many people, including myself, that have real problems with a private organization being able to lien in such a fashion for fines. I mean, that's in fact, that's prohibited in many states, as I understand it.
Well, they do it in every state, even in Virginia, where the Supreme Court has found it to be unconstitutional. The legislature says, oh, well, we overturned the Gilman case. And so we just tried to point out to them they don't have the power to overturn the
right.
Gilman case. I mean, they don't seem to care about that. But, you know, you have the industry attorneys who whisper this stuff in their ears and then give them a martini or so at a cocktail party, and off we go. And away we go, as the saying goes. So is there any good news for homeowners? I mean, the fact that the Houston bill didn't pass is good news.
Homeowners. There's about five bills from legislators all over the state, not just one particular area, but all over the state, to address the priority of payment scam that many of these CAI management companies engage in, where, again, they recharacterize your... They'll claim it's really the HOA, but what you'll find is an amazing correlation between the time that the CAI management company was engaged with the HOA and how quickly the HOAs adopted this priority of payment resolution and how similar all the priority of payment resolutions are that were created by these boards who never knew each other, right? The only common factor is the CAI management company. But at any rate, there's about five bills of trying to address that issue this year, and I suspect that that is going to be dealt with. We'll have to see, but, you know, it's been such a problem across the state, and people are tired of being threatened with the loss of their homes to benefit the management company and the HOA attorney. And if it doesn't get addressed this session, I think there's going to be about 200 bills next session to address the problems in HOAs because, you know, it's become, unfortunately, quite a racket.
With the economic downturn and with the banks doing a heck of a lot of foreclosing themselves, why would HOAs want to exacerbate the problem? You know, when you have an association or when you have a development where a sizable number of the homes, you know, a fair number of the homes have been foreclosed on, and that affects property values, why would they go ahead and do, you know, add fuel to the fire?
Well, you know, that's the interesting myth, is the industry claims it's to preserve property values, but that's an equivocal statement because they never say preserve property values for who. And the reality is, this has been for the benefit of the industry, not the homeowners, not the subdivision. You know, just a few weeks ago, there was a female attorney in San Antonio who filed the foreclosure actions on 84 homes in the same subdivision, claiming they owed money. Now, what wasn't revealed was that she was also the owner of the management company that was claiming that they were in arrears, and she also represented the HOA. It was really it was a shakedown racket, and that's the reason the industry wants the foreclosure powers is to extract, what would you call it, ancillary payments, you know, that are off the books of the HOA. You're going to have to pay the HOA attorney, you're going to have to pay the management company. through with the priority of payment scam, to the extent you haven't paid the HOA attorney or the management company, then the management company is going to continue to rack up collection fees because your payments are being applied from assessments to go pay these entities, and therefore you're behind on your assessments. Therefore, the management company is getting more collection fees. They go in to create chaos, and then they reap, you know, incredible profits from all the hardships they impose on the homeowners. And it's never been for the benefit of the HOA. I can't see how an HOA could possibly benefit from that.
Well, going back to this, I mean, there's no conflict of interest there. You've got the attorney who owns the management company, who represents the association, who files foreclosures. My goodness, that's right. Unbelievable, Bill.
Well, that foreclosure action got halted about a week after it started, and I suspect it was because this was a legislative session year and the industry was very concerned that case in particular. I mean, come on, 84 homes in one subdivision. I think the subdivision had a total of 234 or 300 homes in the subdivision, and they were threatening.
Wow.
They filed a simultaneous foreclosure action on 84 homes in the subdivision. And when people would try to contact the management company, no calls were returned. They went to the news stations. The news stations tried, and I'll have to send you a link. There's a really good link that you might want to put up about the response from the owners of the management company when the news station went to their house.
Is that the one where the guy threw water at?
Yes, he didn't have any qualms threatening people with their loss of their home and refusing to answer any questions. But he was actually the registered agent for the management company, and he didn't appreciate, investigative reporters coming up and saying, hey, what's going on? So he basically threatened at them, cussed at them, threw water on them, tried mishandling their cameras and, you know, doing all sorts of various things. But yes, that was the husband of the management company owner.
That was the husband of the management company owner and the attorney.
She's the attorney. He's the agent for service of process for the management company.
Okay. Wow.
And the management company, of course, is the agent for service process for the HOA. So
how many associations do these people represent?
I don't know, but about a week later, they did another story on a subdivision in New Braunfels, Texas. Voss Farms, I think it was. Similar problems. And, these management companies aren't regulated, and, of course, the industry wants to keep it that way. And...
Actually, Bill, what they're doing is they're trying to regulate them, but they're trying to regulate them.
Right.
And this is what they did here in Virginia, and they're doing in Illinois, and they're doing probably in a number of other places. And then you have Tom Skiba, who says, oh, Shu testifies against... Shu's been out there testifying against licensing managers. I don't care about licensing managers. That's not what I testified against. I testified against the fact that it was CAI who was going to be overseeing this.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. In fact, we went to a hearing on one bill. I'm trying to remember the bill right now. But an industry representative, he was one of the seven or nine lobbyists hired by CAI this year. He's actually a CAI attorney that represents HOAs in the Dallas area. Claimed that they wanted to know what subdivisions these were that were the subject of this testimony, so that industry could step in and stop it. But they didn't need or want, you know, legislation that was going to protect the homeowner. And I thought he didn't state that, of course, but he was opposed to legislation. And I thought, yes, I'm sure the homeowner can count on this attorney coming down pro bono to stop the abuses of the HOA, which is his usual client. And, why can't the homeowner have the right to protect themselves from these organizations? And this year, I went to a number of these hearings, and I have to say most of CAI's stuff was falling on deaf ears. They definitely got in behind the scenes, but, you know, years passed where they were trying to prevent homeowners from voting, when they were trying to come up with the most bizarre excuses for opposing the priority of, you know, legislation to solve the priority of payment scam. Most of that just fell on deaf ears. And so I do think that the legislators are becoming more and more aware and educated about the sophisticated scams that this organization is involved in these HOAs.
Well, I think what I've noticed, Bill, is that they seem to target the rookies, the new people who've just come on who really don't know what's going on and who they are or who CAI is or anything about HOAs. And they seem to go, you know, bearing gifts, and they have all these wonderful ideas to put these legislators on the skyline, and, you know, and they propose these bills to them, and the legislators go for it. They think, oh, yeah, you know, these are my constituents. But you also have some hardened ones that over the years have been in bed with the industry and have
taken the money for years. Yeah.
Yeah, have been getting a lot of campaign contributions, whether it's from CAI directly or another CAI affiliated organization like the Association of, you know, community managers or whatever they call themselves, and individuals as well. And, you know, you look up these individuals and you see, hey, they're managers, they're industry attorneys, they're within the industry, and so they write these nice big fat checks and send them in.
Oh, yeah.
And you bought yourself a legislator. And you pick them up when they're green and new and train them. And then you own them.
They also talk about preserving property values and all this, and that's the argument they use for a lot of things. But not only did they never mention who for, but at some point you have to consider the total cost of ownership of the property. Is it really, why would anyone want to keep putting, you know, being forced to, at what point is the homeowner entitled to decide at what level he wants to preserve property value at? I mean, preserving property values is tax revenue for the county if you don't consider anything else. Does that mean unlimited assessments to, quote, preserve property value? I mean, how is that good for the homeowner?
Yeah, it's not.
You asked about some other good bills, and there is another one, House Bill 4299 by Representative Rose, that would prevent HOAs from prohibiting rainwater collection systems. They've done this. We live in an area that's prone to droughts. We are in our particular subdivision, the developer owns the water company, and of course, in the past, they were trying to force homeowners to engage in activity that would increase consumption of water, and they've been opposed to homeowners having any alternative except for their water system, and including at least previously rainwater collection systems. And although there was some state legislation to allow that a couple of sessions ago, the homeowner was still faced with many burdens, like the HOA would threaten them or try to make it economically unfeasible. So here's the homeowner faced with incurring all the additional costs of putting in one of these systems and having to battle the HOA and incur those costs, too. And, of course, in our case, the HOA is really the developer. But this new bill would prevent HOAs from being able to prohibit rainwater collection systems, which I think at the very least it's important to give the homeowner the choice and not the developer, the people that own the water company, or the HOA board such control over the homeowner's property. So that's a bill that's likely to pass because of the severe water problems that have been occurring in the state the last few years. And that would be good.
That is good, but it's interesting because if you look at what's happening across the country, I mean, we're talking about all this greening and protecting the environment and what's good for, what's good for the planet and renewable resources and all of that, and yet then you have these little mini dictatorships all over the place that ban xeriscaping, which is using native plants because they want people to use certain grasses that are very thirsty and require a whole lot of water. They ban windmills because they're unsightly, so you cannot harness the wind's energy. They ban all solar energy things like solar panels for heating water and heating your house, or cooling even, awnings, roller blinds, and the latest one that I'm waiting for, Bill, I read about this in today's paper, that some people have just taken to heart the idea that they're going to have chickens and they're going to raise their own eggs because this is sustainable. And you have people building chicken coops in their backyards and keeping chickens and hens and getting eggs. And they think that the chicken poop is great for their compost heap. Now, can you imagine what's going to happen when the HOAs start getting a hold of that?
Chaos. I think the natural progression is things need to be allowed to age. These things should not be allowed to last forever. But also that there should be a lot of deference given to the owner and not to the HOA. In the past, I think if you look at CAI's website, you'll notice that they realized that they could make money. I'm not sure they care which way in the end. Previously, it was forced consumption. In the last several years in Texas, the developers have gotten nicely sophisticated to make sure it's forced consumption from third-party vendors that they also own or are affiliated with. So the whole neighborhood's trapped in these water deals or these propane gas deals or internet services deals or telecom deals that are largely unregulated, economically unregulated things, so the developer could, as the residual income stream forever, and the homeowners couldn't do anything about it. And CAI was opposed to a lot of these things in the past, but I think as long as they can mandate something one way or the other, then they're going to have their fining and all these other ancillary revenues that come from fining and enforcement. So their website has changed to suggest that they actually support green things. I think, if anything, they'd like to force homeowners to have unlimited capital improvement liabilities to have to implement these things. It's really they want money from forced, essentially unlimited assessments, unlimited liability of the homeowner. And it doesn't really matter if it's saying, hey, you're forced to consume from these particular vendors, or we're going to force you to incur these costs in order to implement these so-called green things. I think either way you look at it, the homeowner shouldn't be impeded. The homeowner should be able to put it in. The HOA needs to be out of the equation, but homeowners shouldn't be forced to put it in. But they shouldn't be inhibited from putting it in either. That's the only way you're going to get some changes.
Well, a lot of states this year had solar panel bills, or clotheslines was another thing. There's a group called the Laundry List. Out of Vermont. And these guys have been working, Alexander Lee has been working for years to get HOAs to stop banning clotheslines, because he claims that one of the biggest electric consumptions in a house is the clothes dryer, and people should be able to use clotheslines. And, of course, HOAs don't allow clotheslines because, my goodness, that makes you look like a third-world country. We can't have that. So you've got states that are coming in and saying, okay, we're going to introduce legislation here that would override the HOA ban on clotheslines, override the HOA ban on solar panels. But why does that mean that the HOA can then ban you from having awnings, or ban you from having roller blinds, or ban you from xeriscaping? It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. We're doing it piecemeal instead of just flat out saying HOAs, bug out.
Yeah.
Bug out.
There's just been too much money in the development industry, and look what the real estate industry has done to the economy, not of just the United States, but the entire world. It's just been a racket. A lot of these restrictive covenants about the types of grasses you plant, things like that, are because, as we all know, the developer came in and basically wanted, even after homeowners bought their homes, it was supposed to look like inventory to help the developer continue to sell more lots. And so he didn't care what kind of liabilities he put on those folks. And, you had these unrealistically green yards, these mandated watering to create the false facade of this lush environment, which didn't really exist. It does need to be stopped. And we have too many legislators that are profiting from. In fact, that's why some of them are legislators, is they made so much money off of this development stuff and engaging in these activities. They became legislators, and they're continuing to promulgate the same practices. But
well, I don't know about you, Bill, but I think, number one, we ought to do away with the HOA mandates. And I think that the developers ought to be able to respond to their clients. And if the clients want an HOA, build an HOA. If people don't want an HOA, then they ought to have the option of not living in an HOA. If you do have an HOA, you know, your taxes ought to reflect the fact that you're not using the services. So the taxes should come down. I think once that happens, that's less of an incentive for the mandates. And I think the HOA should be renewable. Every 10 years, you vote on it.
I agree with you on that. I think the first part's going to be hard because they're going to, you know, the developer's going to create the HOA because that is a private corporation that it's going to control, so it's not personally involved. It'll control the board, and that way it'll be the HOA on the hook instead of the developer on the hook, and it can exert incredible power over all the residents for decades through the HOA. So the developers are still going to want to have them, but it is important to get rid of the mandates, and I would agree with you to require a renewable, everything must, you know, go through cycles, and things, you know, it's born, it lives, it dies. It's that you can't have these things go on into perpetuity. And requiring them to be renewed, like they automatically, when you say renewed every 10 years, not automatic renewal, require an affirmative renewal.
By 100%. I mean, I believe in a supermajority. I don't believe in, you know, this mamby-pamby 51%.
Right.
I think that you need an affirmative 100%, and if everybody's not in the game, you can't impose this stuff on people. You just can't impose this stuff on people.
Right. And what about these laws that the legislators are passing and getting signed into law that, you know, it affects one geographic area, so most of the rest of the state doesn't know about it. It doesn't affect them. They may not care. The other legislators aren't going to oppose it because it doesn't affect anyone in their district. And yet by doing this in a piecemeal fashion, industry's been able to create area after area where you have not just the mandatory HOAs, but the ability to turn what was, you know, the American zone into the communitarian or whatever else you want to call it zone of mandatory HOAs against the desires of the people who live there and to their great detriment. And those people have no help whatsoever. They didn't vote for it. They weren't aware the legislation was being passed. And, you know, next thing you know, they're in an HOA and perpetual liens on their property, constant threats, private fining, all sorts of these things. I mean, it's ugly.
Well, people are afraid of going home, and they shouldn't be. And kids are watching their parents come home thinking, oh, no, is there going to be a letter from the HOA? And they shouldn't live like that. They shouldn't be raised in that environment. And Americans shouldn't have to live like that.
No.
They absolutely. Bill, we're out of time.
Wow.
It goes fast, doesn't it?
It does go fast, and we didn't even hardly talk about one or two of the bills, but there was a bunch of them.
Well, you're going to have to come back, and hopefully there's going to be some really good homeowner-friendly bills. But, you know, it's not just the homeowner-friendly bills. It's how do you enforce those homeowner-friendly bills.
Right.
Which is a big, big problem. But thank you so much, Bill. I really appreciate you taking time out to talk to us and bring us up to date on what's going on in Texas.
Alrighty, thank you very much, Sue.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.